Hello and welcome to another edition of the Security Ledger podcast. I'm your host, Paul Roberts, editor at the Security Ledger. The last few weeks have seen a lot of public debate about the issue of cyber attribution. This after a devastating attack on Sony Pictures Entertainment in late November had the world wondering who or what was responsible for the attack, while initial speculation focused on former employees laid off in a reorganization in the spring. The world's attention soon shifted to the reclusive Democratic People's Republic of Korea, which was apparently angered by a Sony Pictures movie, The Interview, that depicted the assassination of that country's leader, Kim Jong-un. Whether the Democratic People's Republic of Korea was behind the attack, as the U.S. government and the Obama administration assert, or whether North Korea is the biggest red herring in the history of computer attacks is yet to be determined. What is clear is that the means and methods to attribute online attacks are still a work in progress. With us today to talk about cyber attribution is Thomas Ridd. He's a professor of security studies at King's College London and the author most recently of a paper in the Journal of Strategic Studies with Ben Buchanan on the subject of attributing cyber attacks. Ridd's work covers a broad spectrum of security questions. His most recent book, Cyber War Will Not Take Place, is a comprehensive analysis of political computer attacks driven by events, technical detail, and political theory. Thomas Ridd, welcome to the Security Ledger podcast.
Tell us a little bit about this paper that you did with Ben Buchanan on attributing cyber attacks.
Yeah, so we did this paper, Ben Buchanan and myself. He's my PhD student and also a certified forensic analyst. So the goal was to bridge the gap between the strategic level or the political level, if you like, and the technical, tactical level on the other end, because attribution is such a big problem that involves so many different parties, depending on the case, of course, you're looking at, that oftentimes you have a communication problem within, say, large companies or intelligence agencies about how to actually understand the problem. And the basic issue is that the person doing some of the nitty-gritty digital forensic analysis on specific indicators of compromise may not, you know, have a lot of contextual knowledge about the political situation in a country that is suspected to be behind it, for instance. So you need to have that.
In kinetic crimes, in physical world crimes, there are kind of standards of proof, right? And this is a well-developed science over really hundreds of years as to how to conduct criminal investigations and what types of evidence is enough to, you know, gain a criminal conviction of somebody.
Yeah.
My sense is in the computer forensic space, in the cyberspace, that is not necessarily the case yet. Or is it? I don't know.
Well, you know, it's a very dynamic space. So we've seen a number of company reports that you will be familiar with and many of your listeners as well, I presume. Company reports like the most famous one I think is the Mandiant report or APT1 report that pinpointed or identified this PLA unit 61398, published obviously by Mandiant and now FireEye. There are other reports by Kaspersky Lab, by Symantec, McAfee, CrowdStrike, a lot of private sector companies. And these reports, it's remarkable to see that companies have started putting out reports that actually offer more evidence that then enables us to come up with informed assumptions about who was behind a specific breach. I say companies because we're not looking at, because of course governments and intelligence agencies and law enforcement agencies are also doing this kind of work, but they usually don't publish the result, the reports. They may publish just the outcome of an investigation, but we know, for instance, that the FBI, together with the Air Force Office of Special Investigations and the Department of Defense, they did a detailed investigation into Moonlight Maze in 1999. Some of those records are on the public domain now, and you can see how much work they invested into finding out who did this, who breached all these DoD systems. that was, government systems.
Right, that was what we would now, the term didn't exist back then, but what we would now call an APT-type attack.
A Moonlight Maze was a major breach, the first major breach that was attributed to a foreign government, and in that case it was Russia, it was attributed to Russia. It started in mid-1998 and went on until, 2001, so for many years, and it never really stopped. It's remarkable because so many of the techniques that the intruders used at the time, as well as many of the forensic techniques that the U.S. government used to find out more about who did it, are the same today. In fact, many of the individuals involved are the same. Even Kevin Mundia was involved at that case back in the day. So we have a great amount of expertise. There's a history. The individuals we can talk to and interview. So I think there's interesting work to be done on attribution.
What are some of the techniques that are used to get some kind of positive identification of a perpetrator or actor in cyber incidents? I know, obviously, in physical crimes, you have things like ballistics. You have, physical evidence that can be gathered from the scene, from fingerprints and hair samples. What are we talking about in the case of cyber investigations?
We're talking, just like in other investigations, we're talking about a lot of different things that could that can be useful. One big set of traces or indicators, forensic data, are, of course, all sorts of log files that can shed light on a specific breach. So let's make an example. If you find out that a specific that the files that were exfiltrated, that were stolen, taken out of one specific site, went to a proxy server or some sort of hop site in somewhere else, and you then get the connection files, say the FTP transfer logs from that server, then you would be in a position to connect the dots. You can say, okay, not only site A was breached from that server, but also site B or site C. And then you can connect different breaches into one larger set of breaches.
Right.
Because you have those files.
Has the science advanced, and has the science become a science, or is it still more of an art practiced by a little bit differently by different practitioners?
That's a tough question to answer. Why? Because attribution, it's important to note that attribution is not new. It's not a new problem in this context. It has happened. It's been happening, going on for a long time. Of course, in a law enforcement context, in a sort of when we're talking about computer crime, the situation is oftentimes easier because you have countries, cooperating with each other without limitations. And so attribution can be done. It is happening. But the debate about how attribution should be done, especially when we're talking about nation state actors, there it gets tricky because a lot of people seem to make the assumption that attribution is close to impossible, that the level of proof that you can achieve, and you mentioned the level of evidence that we can should accept, but this is by definition limited in this context. And I think the interesting question is, we all realize that sometimes evidence is limited, sometimes the level of proof that you can achieve, level of certainty that you can achieve is limited, but that doesn't answer the bigger question, which is, how can you raise it, and how far do you need to raise it in order to be able to react politically, to do something in response?
And what is that line?
It's a political decision, because you need political pressure to actually get more evidence, to bring more evidence to bear. So sometimes if you say to a government, if something really bad happened, you can say to a government, okay, you have to, if you really insist you were not that you were not part of this operation, or that you didn't do this or sponsor this operation, then provide, help us find the evidence and uncover the evidence by opening up a specific log, forensic data files, by giving access to ISPs in your country, etc.
But isn't that kind of guilty until proven innocent? Isn't that kind of an inversion of what we in the West, and certainly in the UK and United States, have long kind of supposed, you need to suppose that they're innocent, and if you think you're going to say they're guilty, you need to provide the evidence.
I think it's a bit more complicated than that, because sometimes, because the alternative is that a country could say, well, you know, we didn't do this, but you also can't look at all the connection data in our jurisdiction because we don't cooperate with you. I mean, that's just not an acceptable position to take if there is a reasonable suspicion that a specific country could be involved. And when is that the case? When the political stakes are really high. So I think the North Korea case is an interesting one, because for the first time, this has reached a specific disruptive attack has reached such a high political, high stakes, situation.
Your article obviously is really well timed, because these issues are very much in the conversation and in the spotlight because of the hack of Sony Pictures Entertainment, because of the U.S. government's decision to both name the DPRK as the main suspect in that hack, and in fact to impose sanctions on particular individuals and organizations within the DPRK. And a lot of people within the information security community take issue with the attribution and say, no, you know, none of the information, none of the evidence that's been presented so far is at all conclusive.
Yeah.
What is your take on Sony Pictures Entertainment, the hack, and the decision of the Obama administration to hang it on North Korea?
So even if you take the position that you don't fully buy that the hack was North Korean, we're still talking about North Korea in this context, obviously, because it's part of the entire situation. Now, specifically on the attribution here, I don't think the FBI has presented a lot of evidence. So we have to be careful. The computer security community, also people, the skeptics have to be careful and not think that the FBI has made their case. They only basically did a press release so far and gave a press conference, and they did not reveal the evidence that they base their analysis on, deliberately so. So the truth, the ugly truth is we can't judge the quality of the evidence. We can't say it's good or not good because they didn't show it to us. So they only gave us a tiny glimpse. Because of the significant amount of skepticism that you alluded to, a lot of people don't buy it that it was North Korea. A lot of people who actually understand the technology and have some understanding of the attribution issues at case, they don't buy it. So personally, would give slightly more. I take the U.S. government's position here very seriously because of the intelligence failures of the past decade. So, for instance, Bruce Schneier recently made the case that, you know, we've seen Iraqi WMDs. The government said there would be Iraqi WMDs, weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. There weren't. 9/11 also was an intelligence failure in a way. So a lot of people draw the conclusion, well, look at the intelligence community. They failed in the past. Maybe they're failing again here. Now, I would, in a way, flip that argument on its head and say, well, you know, a lot of people in the intelligence community have actually learned from their mistakes in the past, and they certainly don't want to make those mistakes again. So if they come forward with a statement like this, I would hope, maybe this is me being too optimistic, but I would hope and I would expect that they base that assessment on proper evidence. But I agree with a lot of people in the debate now, for instance, Bruce Schneier again, who say, you know, we want to see a little more evidence in order to agree with you, because, you know, the stakes are too high. This is really important.
One of the problems seems to be that you do have this very robust, you know, multi-billion dollar information security community and industry with, as you mentioned, its own very considerable technical capabilities who weigh in on these things. So it would almost be like if, you know, there was an investigation of a shooting, and before the case went to trial, you had independent ballistics companies saying, well, we've looked at that, you know, the ballistics evidence, and our analysis says, no, it wasn't, you know, this type of gun, it was that type of gun. And that would sow the seeds of a lot of doubt within the community about the ability of the authorities to conduct their investigation. Obviously, you don't have that because the government comes in, takes control of the crime scene, and basically controls all of the information related to it as they build their case. And that's not the case, obviously, with cyber. Is that okay? Is that to be expected? Or does there need to be more kind of formality about the way that these investigations are conducted so that the public can get comfortable that the information is legitimate?
You know, this is a new space in terms of publishing evidence. This is a new problem for governments. What kind of evidence we expect from a government?
Right.
And I would just add here that the indictment, of course, provided far more evidence than the press release that the FBI offered. So personally, I would think that at some point over the next weeks, I would hope that we would see more evidence from the Department of Justice and the FBI.
That could be. I mean, they have indicated that some of the evidence they have might be classified in nature, the result of humans and human intelligence or signals intelligence from the intelligence community, in which case they would not want to divulge what that evidence is. Could that be a problem in terms of getting closure on this incident, or obviously bringing it to trial and trying to pursue it as a criminal matter, which it clearly is?
I'm not so sure that this will be treated as a regular criminal case, because obviously it isn't. It's a foreign government that is involved, and we're looking at a different political environment. It's not a domestic or even international criminal case as such. If it was indeed the North Korean government that was behind it, ultimately,
even though the victim was a private company, even though the information stolen was commercial intellectual property, you think it would still really become more of a political and diplomatic matter.
Let me ask the question back. Is anybody really expecting that those five PLA operatives will ever see the inside of an American courtroom?
Well, probably not. No, but you never know. Is the U.S. government setting a precedent whereby any cyber attack that plausibly could be linked to a foreign government is no longer a criminal matter to be dealt with by the courts, but a political and potentially military affair? That could put us in a situation of very easily having things escalate.
I would be very, very cautious to generalize from this case because it was so, so special. It was special for a number of reasons. One reason was that it created so much press coverage, not because of the technical sophistication of the case, but because somebody called Angelina Jolie, a minimally talented spoiled brat, things like that. It just that's what created the press coverage, and then the threat that prompted the different theater operators to cancel the screenings. That, of course, created this impression that somebody else is censoring content in the United States, and so it created a political situation that Obama needed to react to. Again, not because, for instance, very different from the Saudi Aramco attack in 2012, it was technically not such a huge, I would think, such a huge problem, and the scenario there wasn't that scary. What created the political pressure was something else. So it's difficult to generalize, I think.
Okay, so think twice before you hack celebrities, right?
Yes.
In terms of attribution, how attribution is done by the government, either ours or yours or some other nations, how quickly governments weigh in as to who they think is behind a particular incident, do you think that this will change the approach going forward in future incidents that could potentially be linked to a nation state or where a nation state is on the short list of suspects?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We are in precedent-setting terrain here. As I said, some of the main company reports are setting precedents. The indictment is setting a precedent. And now a lot of governments are watching this space very, very closely. And this is also why I think it's so important that the FBI and the DOJ and the U.S. government, more generally speaking, are stepping up to the plate. I think they really need to do more to convince more of the skeptics. Because if they don't, you know, it just sets a very funny precedent for the future. Do we want to give other governments a similar room for maneuver to point the finger at another government and then say, you know, trust us, we have the evidence? Right now, the U.S. is in the position to just do this because they're one of the first. But if, you know, suppose another government is doing something similar, you just also as a fellow state, if you like, even as an ally, you just want to be in a position to say something more informed about this situation. It's really important, I think, that we don't use this argument that attribution can't be done, that it's super hard and impossible, as a widescreen to then, you know, do conspiracy theory instead, to project bizarre ideas into that white space.
Right.
Because, and you know, both for people with very questionable political views in the US, but the same applies to North Korea. If they think, let's assume they didn't do it for a moment, just as a quick thought experiment. Let's assume Korea did not do this. And they may then think to themselves or others that, well, you know, the Americans don't really offer very convincing evidence. We really should be doing this in the future because we can get away with it. We can achieve a political objective with it.
Right.
And that's what you don't want to happen.
Right.
Tom, thank you for joining us on the Security Ledger podcast, and we hope to have you back soon.
Thank you.
Thomas Ridd is a professor of security studies at King's College London and an authority on cyber attribution. His most recent book is Cyber War Will Not Take Place.